Hi, my name is Andrea Kravitz. I'm the Vice President of the User Centered Design Department at Elsevier. I realize I'm a very fortunate person. I have 60 full-time people across Europe and the U.S. who get to do what we're talking about today. So typically, we start off the process very much in the ethnographic research or in the user studies. And after we have that data and we've gathered it and we've analyzed it, we then go off and design a product. After we've designed the product, the next step is to do some usability testing. So I'm going to actually explain the process of usability testing to you very, very quickly, give you some great resources to go to, and then Kirsten is going to actually show you how the process is implemented in a real-life case study. What is usability? It's actually an ISO standard, believe it or not, and people define it differently. Each organization will define it differently for their particular needs. But basically, you're looking at the product and the ability of the user to use that product. Is it efficient? Is it easy to use? Is it error-prone? Do they have to repeat the same thing over and over and over again in order to understand what they're doing? The concept here is you want the product to be usable for the user for the task that it was intended. And again, that's why all that earlier research was so important, because you spent time understanding your user, understanding what they're doing, their tasks, their environment, their needs. You've designed a product now, and now you're going to test it and see, did actually you design a product that satisfies the needs that you identified in the user understanding piece of the process? Usability applies to everything, not just online products and not just technical products. You encounter usability issues every single day. If you look at this fan, you see that there are two cords. Hopefully you can see the two cords. And the question is, as the user of the fan and the light, you pull one cord, it will turn on the fan, and one cord will turn on the light. Which cord does which? And then, after you actually figure that out, how do you know what speed the fan is on? Is it one speed, two speeds, three, five? Sort of frustrating. Again, it's not going to change your life, but think about this as people are using your products, and when they get frustrated with your products and they have alternative products they can go to. So you're trying to prevent them from being too frustrated. This is an example, and take a look at this. This is a dryer, and you're going to see a lot of buttons, and the question is, how do you start the dryer? This actually is the dryer of one of my employees in St. Louis, and when he took the dryer home, and his wife had to call him and say, I can't start the dryer. One button does two things. How do you know which thing it's doing when you press it? And you would really want to know whether you're resuming the cycle or starting. Every day we encounter usability problems. So how do we try to solve these usability problems? Well, we perform usability testing. And basically what we're doing is observing the user, using the product, and then watching how they use the product and determining if really some of these issues are truly individual issues or are they problems that we need to actually fix. There are different tests that we will do in usability testing. Sometimes they're diagnostic tests. We just want to know, is this working, is it not working? Sometimes we're verifying. So we'll have a goal that we've set. Does the page load this quickly? Does the screen paint this fast? Is the user able to do something within 5 seconds? We'll have a goal, and we'll actually do a test simply to verify that we've met that usability goal. Sometimes we're doing comparative studies where we have actually designed something based on user input, and we're not sure, will the user like A, B, or C? So we will show them all three options and get their feedback to determine which is the one that's most valuable to them. Whenever you perform a usability test, and this is very important, you understand that you're evaluating the product and the user interface. You are not evaluating the user. There is no bad user. There is only a bad UI and a bad product. And you really have to spend a lot of time making your users feel comfortable that you're not looking at their ability to perform the task. We're looking at our ability to design a task they can actually perform. It's really important to know that there are limitations to usability testing. And similar to what you heard about user research studies, You're looking at one user at a time. It is an artificial environment. It might be in a usability lab. It might be at the user's workstation. But it's still artificial. You're asking them to do something in a particular way to satisfy our needs. And so you're not necessarily going to accomplish everything that you would like to have done in that limited environment. At Elsevier, we look at the five E's of usability. Is the product effective? Is it efficient? Is it engaging? What's the error tolerance? And is it easy to learn? You have to think of these E's as sliding bars. So how we might define the goals of those five E's if we're building an air traffic controller application is very, very different than if we're designing a product for a consumer to go online to a website and actually purchase a plane ticket. If you think of error tolerance as an example, if the user makes a mistake buying a plane ticket, not a big deal, we can get it fixed. If the air traffic controller makes a mistake using a system, it's a critical mistake, perhaps, and so our tolerance level there is going to be very, very minimal. And these are some of the goals that you'll define for yourself as you actually create the goals for your usability test. Planning the usability test. Each of these topics is something I could talk about for hours, each one individually for an hour. So I'm going to give you a quick one slide on each one to give you some foundation and understanding about what the tasks are, and then you'll actually see those tasks played out in the next presentation. But I will also give you some resources at the end so that you can see how you can learn to do this. You do not have to be a user experience professional or somebody with a human factors background or human computer interaction or information architecture background to be able to do these things. You can educate yourself. There are consultants out there who can help you. You're going to create a test plan. You're going to determine your test goals. You're going to recruit participants. Determine incentives, and we'll talk about logistics. And you're going to look to create your test script, which is one of the most important things. Besides recruiting participants, the test script is very important. We'll talk for a second about consent forms and NDAs, and then the analysis and the final report, which is really a very time-consuming piece of this process. So the first thing that we do is we work with our key product management staff and the user experience person to define the test plan. And we determine what our goals are. What are we really trying to do? Is this a verification test? Is this a comparative test? What is it we want to get out of this? What kind of recruiting are we going to do? And who is going to recruit the users? This is not an insignificant process. This does take a lot of time. And then what are the session logistics? Are we going to go internationally? Are we going to only have one person do the test? Are we going to have five people do the test? And each of those processes determines how long and how much effort the test plan will incorporate. After we have our test plan, we then determine our test goals. This is what we're going to need out of the test. So your goals need to be very, very specific. You can, I've used the word personas here. I don't know if everybody knows what that is, but basically what we do is look at our user group and try to articulate an example of a user. We call it persona, and I'm happy after this session to talk about personas to anybody. I think that's fundamental to what you have to do in this process. But you have your persona, the type of user, what you're expecting that person to do. And based on that persona, that type of user, you're going to actually create very specific goals to test. So I've listed here some examples of the kind of goal that you might have in your usability test. User recruiting. Here, after we've identified the type of user, the personas that we're going at to recruit for the test, we then determine how many do we want to talk to. And again, as you heard earlier from Lisa, this is not statistically significant. We don't say, oh, we have 4 million users, so we have to talk to 20% of the 4 million. Not at all. We typically use 8 users of a persona in a particular type of environment as our foundation. So what does that mean? 8 librarians in the U.S. at a major university is enough for us to feel comfortable. 8 medical researchers in private hospitals, enough for us to feel comfortable, at least going forward with the first round of tests. we typically will do repetitive user testing. This process, that the user experience user-centered design process, is very, very iterative. So we may test, we'll find some problems. We hope we don't, but we usually do. We go back, we redesign, we test again. So again, we're going to keep going back and testing, not always with the same users, often with different users. I listed here recruit the real user. This may not be an issue in your organizations. It sometimes is in Elsevier, where we have people who used to be a scientist and now they're working in Elsevier, so they say, oh, I can do it for you. I can be the user. And our philosophy is, no, you can't. If you are not outside of our organization actually doing the job, you're not the user. And so it's really important that you not use people except the real user. Recruiting users with different backgrounds and characteristics, you're looking again, the personas, the user types, what are their jobs, how long have they been in the industry, are they native language speakers? Accessibility, disabilities becomes very, very important for us. We spend a lot of time on the accessibility issue. We always test our products with people with handicaps for various reasons to make sure that our products will work with various screen readers and people with disabilities. I've listed here, give yourself 2 weeks before you actually start to plan the test to actually get the users. That is really optimistic. We don't have a lot of luck in 2 weeks. If you read a lot of the books, they'll tell you 2 weeks. I will tell you that no. We usually say a month. People are very, very busy. Their schedules change. You align things, and then it changes again. So really, if you're going to go out and spend time with users and do this correctly and get it lined up correctly, give yourself a little bit more than 2 weeks to do so. Incentives. Some organizations allow incentives. Some do not. Some organizations will not allow their participant to actually have incentives. They're not allowed. They work for the government. They're not allowed to take a gift card. They're not allowed to take cash. Some organizations won't allow their employees to have the incentive, but they will allow you to make a donation to an organization in their name. So these are all options that you can look at. But honestly, unless the user is somebody who really wants to help you, you usually have to incent them in some way. Okay, the session logistics. Well, first of all, getting people for more than an hour is close to impossible. We used to ask for 90 minutes and found that nobody wants to give you 90 minutes. So 60 minutes tends to be about the length of a typical session. Typically, we divide the session in that hour, 5-minute intro, 10-minute background. The 10-minute background is sort of get the user to feel comfortable with you, wanting to talk to you. Sometimes they're nervous and they're anxious. Even though they're just talking one-on-one, there might be a camera there or somebody else, and so they're a little nervous, and we spend that time just calming them down and getting background. Then we spend 40 minutes on the tasks and 5 or so minutes to close. We will allow observers, usually in our case, those are product managers or engineers who are building the product. It's very, very important that the person who is actually technically building the product often hears the user's frustrations. At least for us, our engineers will often say, well, I can do that. Well, of course you can do that. Can the user do that? And so hearing the user's frustration is often helpful to them. Our key is, though, one observer. If you are in the room or the location with the user, one observer. And that observer takes notes. No more than 2 people, 1 user. If we're in a usability lab, and we do have usability labs, and I'll show you some photos of those labs, we will allow as many people as that can fit behind that mirror, that double glass, to be there because the user doesn't see them. We tell them they're there, but they don't really know how many people are there. But if we're actually seated with the user in their environment, no more than 2 people. Equipment. We're fortunate to have a lot of equipment that we can track the user's facial expression in a usability test. We can track timing, how long it takes them to actually respond to requests that we ask them. We have software that tracks their keystrokes, their errors, so it helps us actually calculate some of that data. If you don't have that, then you need a great note taker who is sitting and observing and actually saying, took the user this long to do this. This is the first thing they selected. This is the second thing. This is their frustration. I noticed they got concerned at this point. And that way you can go back and look at that data later. You want to make sure that you actually have the incentives ready to go and to hand to, because users are expecting them. If you promise them, don't mail them to them. Make sure you have them with you. And we always provide drinks and snacks because, again, it's a way to get people to actually come to your session. Here's a traditional usability lab. I'm fortunate, I think, in 6 locations I actually have usability labs. But you can see, for purposes of this presentation, you can see that there are people behind watching the user work. The user doesn't see those people. And this is some of the technology that we have available. But you can see that we have a lot of cameras, a lot of screens, so that we can actually capture them. We also have accessibility software if we're testing for accessibility issues. If you don't have access to a usability lab, you can always do the testing at the user site, or you can actually rent a usability lab. They are all over the US, Europe, everywhere actually. We've rented them all over the world, and you can use a lab. You really have to, as you get into this, you'll learn that there's a difference in a lab setting versus in the user's environment, and you have to account for that. Either we use both, we use them all. We just account for the differences in whether we ask somebody to actually come to our site or they're on their site. The test script. Here you're going to spend some time, because this is really what you're hoping to get out of this activity. What are some background questions? And this is, again, one, so you can understand the user, because if you have recruited the right user, their answers to their background, their roles, their tasks, their environment will fit perfectly with what you're going to ask them to do. If you have recruited the wrong user, you will figure that out very quickly here. And you have to keep going, but you will know that in going forward that some of the way you ask them to do the tasks maybe will not be what you had expected. And so you're going to have to account for that as you go through your results. You then ask for the tasks. We typically do 4 to 8 main tasks in a session. Often our sales, marketing, product people will ask us to throw in a question about this or a question about that, but basically we have 4 to 8 tasks. We try to, again, match the task to what the user is doing, and most importantly, and this is where training is really important, similar to user studies, you don't want to be leading the user. This is very, very important. It's so easy to do. You can do it by body language. You can do it by your eyes focusing on a part of the screen and the user looking to where you are, and they say, oh, that's where it is. So you really have to be very, very careful. There's some people who say you should sit two steps behind the user so they can't see your face. We tend to sit next to the user. It's our comfort level, but you have to be very careful about what cues you give, because then your results are skewed. At the end, the last 5 minutes, we then ask the user to tell us a little bit. Tell us, you know, 3 of the things that you liked, 3 of the things that you didn't like. Because there may have been something about the product that was not what we were testing or not what we were asking about, yet we didn't ask it and they didn't say it, and they have something they want to tell you. And if enough people tell you the same 3 things each time, you have another problem you need to go test. Informed consent, at least for us, we have to have an informed consent and NDA form signed by all participants. This is really twofold. One, we're often showing a product that isn't released publicly, and so we don't want the user to tell others about it. Also, we are videoing and audio taping almost all of our participants, and that can be used internally. It's never, ever, ever used externally in our case. But we do want the user to understand, and the NDA form is actually very clear as the informed consent form. Their name and their identification is never used, even internally. So we will say, librarian, major university, US, end of story. We do not ever, even to our internal product teams, do they know who these users are. We have a legal team that reviews our forms and updates them all the time, but if you are going to create a form, don't just pull one off the internet. Make sure that your legal department or who's ever responsible in your organization validates it and make sure it's okay. How do you actually conduct the session? The first thing you want to do is encourage people. We call it thinking aloud, and you're going to hear that again, I think, in the later presentation. This is where we say to the user at the beginning of the session, as you are performing the task, tell us what you're thinking. Tell us what you're doing. And There are tools and techniques to help users. Some will tell you, some will, are very quiet. How do you pull it out of them? How do you get them to communicate if they're not that communicative? And I'll give you some sources that will help you with that at the end of the presentation. When you ask the user to perform a task, give them a little bit of time to actually perform the task. Don't just interrupt them. Don't keep pushing them forward. Give them a little time to. You've been living with the product for a long time. You know what to do. They really don't. You need to know, though, when you should help the user and when you shouldn't. And typically, after the user sort of looks at you three or four times, and I don't know what to do, and I'm not sure, and say, pretend I'm not here. What are you going to do? And then that sort of gives them freedom to feel that they are comfortable. Again, you're testing the UI and the product. You have to keep saying to the user, look, if you're having a trouble, it's our trouble. We'll fix it, but please keep going forward. We ask only open-ended questions. We never ask a yes or no question. Everything is always open-ended, and often it's followed by the, and why do you think that, and why do you think that, and why do you think that? And of course, we record all of the questions and the answers and any anxiety we happen to see on the user's face. Then we perform the hard part, which is the data analysis. There's a lot of data. It's not, as we said, Lisa said, not just numbers. It is a lot of text, a lot of words, a lot of data. And it has to be analyzed. We recommend that you do this as soon as the session is over, because you will be fresh and your notes will be fresh. You then have to do a lot of analysis on that data, and you evaluate the comments, and then you rate the importance of those issues. The ratings we use, others use these ratings. There are additional ones you could use, the frequency of the comments, the impact of the comment, the market impact, the persistence. You know, sometimes, honestly, in a usability test, we will see a showstopper where we say, this is really big, and we can't get this fixed before the release, and the release is going to have to wait, because this was an issue that none of us had realized would be an issue. But yet, three or four users identify it as an issue. We know we have a big problem. And then lastly, under recommendations, don't ever eliminate potential solutions. Sometimes we are as guilty of this as anyone. We look at what's the quickest solution to fix the problem, because we've got to get the product out, and it's got to go out. But often our potential solution is a longer-term solution, and we will get the product out because we have to meet a marketing date or a trade show, and then we'll bring it back in and revise it and test it again. So don't eliminate those potential solutions. There are a tremendous, tremendous amount of resources available to you to help you learn how to do usability testing. You can train people. You can recruit experts in the field. Local universities have people. You can establish a usability working group, something like I have at Elsevier. You can hire consultants. You can purchase some software. Not a plug for Elsevier, although I know it looks that way. These are Morgan Kaufman, who, one of our imprints, some of the publications. We publish tremendously in this field, and a lot of the Bibles that Lisa suggested to you actually do come from our publications. We are not the only people who publish in this area. So definitely go look online, get some books, and teach yourself. There's also something that I've just come across in the last year or so it's relatively new, but we have published a book called Moderating User Tests. And I highly recommend you check out this website. The wonderful thing about this website is that you don't actually have to purchase the book to see 8, 9, 10 videos of usability sessions and usability experts actually doing little vignettes. And how do you deal with a user who is uncommunicative? How do you deal with a user who's having a hard time with your product? How do you not lead the user? And it's really worth, if you think you want to try to do this on your own, buy a few books, but look at these videos. I think you'll find them very, very helpful and useful. And then there are a couple of other sources here that I think would be useful to you. And in addition, I will tell you that I am available. I am here. I'm happy to answer questions about user-centered design, usability. It is my passion. It is what I do. I'm always happy to answer questions, even outside of this organization. So thank you for your time.